Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. I'm sorry about last week, Thursday and Friday. I still have not been able to find out what happened to our technology with Blog Talk Radio. Could have been anything, I guess. I do apologize, though, because I don't like to miss the shows. And it kind of puts us behind a little bit. And I'm afraid everybody will get out of the mode of talking about things that bother them and stuffing them. And not healthy for us, not healthy for any of us. Tonight we have a special guest. I met Linda via the phone through a mutual friend a couple weeks ago, and she teaches some classes at one of the colleges, and she has written some books, and what she's concentrating on is the really younger crowd, elementary school and middle school, which is middle school is where a lot of the stuff happens that gets so far out of hand. For some reason, things start to calm down once kids get into high school, unless they've gotten themselves into a place that they purely can't get out of. And I've been told on many occasions that some of the older people I've spoken to and spent time with on the phone, even privately, have been harassed for many years out of their lives, and often by the same person. So Linda's idea, which I love, is really about teaching the kids as they're growing up in their really formative years about embracing each other's differences. And we've talked about that a lot on the show, because I think we really get that. We are all different. I spent Sunday with a young woman who's struggling, and I always think about talking about a puzzle. And I said, "Have you ever done a puzzle, a jigsaw puzzle?" "Yeah." I said, "Well, did you find any pieces that are the same?" She said, "No," and she kind of smiled at me, and I said, "Well, that's because we wouldn't all fit together if we were the same. We're just like that puzzle. We have to be different to really be able to fit in all together and make the big picture." So I do believe that, and I believe that it would be incredibly boring if we were all the same anyway. So we're going to bring in Linda, and I have Shelley on the line, and we're going to let Linda just fill us in on what she's already accomplished, and I have a few questions, but first I'd like her to enlighten us as to what she's already done. Hi, Linda. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. How are you tonight?
Thank you. I'm well, thank you, ma'am. How are you?
I'm great. I'm glad I'm back on the air. I can't tell you how much I miss this. This is as therapeutic for me as it is for anybody else.
And technology sometimes does take over, doesn't it?
Oh, my gosh. Well, as wonderful it is as it is, it's also very, I don't know, frustrating, I guess is
yes,
the right word.
Extremely. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So,
yes.
I would like to invite Shelley in. Shelley has been my one of my closest friends for, gosh, we're going in probably in 15 years soon. And she pretty much co-anchors with me. She's been off a few times because she's been lucky enough to go on a nice vacation. But I'm going to bring her in so that you can meet her. The two of you will really hit it off because of course, we all want the same things. And
right.
Shelley,
right.
Are you there?
Yes, I am, Renee. How are you?
I'm good, dear. I'm good. I want you to meet Linda. Linda, this is Shelley.
Hi, Shelley.
Linda.
Very nice to meet you, Linda. I'm very interested in hearing what you have to speak about tonight. So welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Let me just started off by just saying how I got interested in helping the littlest of the littlest who do not have a voice. And those are 4, 5, and 6-year-olds. And last year, about a year ago, I started reading a lot about elementary and middle school and high school children committing suicide because they didn't know what else to do in their pain that's so fiery inside of them from being bullied that was their way out of their pain. And I looked at that and did a lot of research, and I thought, we've got to catch them before they get to that stage, and they don't just start getting bullied when they're in middle school. It's a progression. And so I started doing some research, and I started talking to three groups, because I do teach college, and I do believe in research, and I do write textbooks for graduate level and doctoral level students. But my mission was to write children's books and to start touching the lives of the littlest of the littlest. So in my research, I did a lot of talking with pre-K and K students, and then middle and high school was my next group, and then adults. Because even though you're bullied as you're little, and I don't know anyone who hasn't been yet, and it carries through, somehow when we become adults, we put that bullying pain in the deepest part of our heart, and we don't bring it out until something triggers that pain. And I have lots of stories I can share with that. But my focus was on pre-K through probably about second or third grade. And I thought, how do I touch their lives? How do I tell them that they can be resilient to bullying? They do have a voice. And how do I do that? So I thought the best way for me to touch their lives and to help was, number one, to write a children's book. I didn't know I could do it. God gave me the wherewithal to do that. And my late husband, I heard him over my shoulder encouraging me. And I wanted to be a storyteller. It's not just enough, in my opinion, to write a book and get it on a shelf and all that good stuff, but it's to consistently tell the story and hear the stories of the little people, our children. So I not only decided to write the books, and it's a series of books, because it needs to be consistently told, and I also do storytelling for underprivileged, underserved children. And I've been telling stories to quite a few children in the areas of Apopka, around that area, and in West Palm Beach. And I'm affiliated with, through my late husband, Barbara Bush Literacy Foundation for the state of Florida. And they've been giving me the gracious open doors for me to go talk with the children that they serve through the Literacy Foundation. And my story started, I didn't want it to be a book about people or little people or stick figures or anything like that. I wanted it to be friendly. I wanted them to learn more than just about they have a voice and resiliency. And so I wanted it to be with something in the ocean, so that they could learn about the ocean, they could learn about creatures in the ocean, and it would probably stick longer in their brain with bullying or anti-bullying if they could learn also about things in the ocean that they don't know about. And I'll share a story with you. When I was in Apopka a month ago telling the story, there were about 25 children there with their parents, and not one of those children had ever seen the ocean. And I wanted to get a bus and take them. Yeah, and I wanted to get up. It's north of Orlando. I wanted to get a bus and just take them to the ocean and just watch their little faces as they walked in the water, but another lifetime. But anyway, I wanted to write a story that was non-threatening, that talked about bullying. If you do a lot of research, this year in February, in one of the, let me make sure I say this right, in the journals, Counseling Today, it's an American Counseling Association publication, and 13 million children will be bullied this year in the United States alone. Wow. 3 million of those children will be absent from school at any point each month. And we want to know why they're having trouble learning.
Yep.
So my series is called Collection Wetley and Friend. It is published by Educovision, which is out of Pompano. They are publishing it in four languages, English, Creole, Spanish, and German. And it is a series. We have two books already published with them, and the third one is in the works. And I have about 10 ideas already lined up. So I think important not only to tell children that they have a voice, someone will listen, they are resilient, they don't need to be bullied, they don't need to accept it, but it has to be consistent. Therefore, my idea of a series of books. Mm-hmm. So that's what I started out doing, and my passion has just grown from there because I talk to the people, the little kids, and their stories are unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Well, they are incredible. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I thought the other day, when you look at a young child, and it starts there. It doesn't just start in middle school. It starts at the youngest of ages. And if you watch them, they have a very strong desire to make sense of the world around them. And they don't know the world around them except what they make sense of it. And if it's all about telling a child they have big ears, consistently, then the world around them means they must have big ears and therefore are different and therefore can be bullied. And so we have to make sure that their world that they make sense of is healthy and is strong with their voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's very, very important to me. So that was my journey.
Well,
that's how I've started, and that's how I continue forward.
Well, and I agree with everything that you've said, and of course, you and I have already established the fact
mm-hmm.
that we're on kind of the same road. I do. Mm-hmm. I mean, 3.5 years ago, the very first lecture I ever gave, I told everybody. I said, "Look, I was a daycare mother, so I could stay home with my own kids, and I'm telling you right now, if I took you in a play yard with 2, 3, and 4-year-olds that have not been
right.
to school, that have only either been at a daycare center or home with mommy and daddy and brother and sister, you can already see who's going to be a bully, who's going to be
right.
a crybaby, who's going to be a socialite, who's going to hide in the corner. They're already there.
Right.
And it's our job to make the bully into everybody's friend, to make the shy child know that everybody wants to be their friend, to make the socializer know that there's room for everybody because they become too self-centered. That is our job as the parents. That's why there's little people with grown-ups.
Right.
That's
right.
our job, you know.
Why else do we have them, Lainey?
Exactly, you know. And I'm not saying it's easy, but if you don't keep trying until you get through,
right.
then shame on you.
Right.
You know.
Right. And we have to keep trying,
and
they're all of our children. They're not. They're all
absolutely.
Of our children because they are our future, and they are our legacy. And we've got to make them strong and resilient and like themselves and not be afraid. They cannot. We have to teach them not to be afraid. And when you're 4 years old, how in the world do you do that?
I know.
There
is some good stuff out there, you know, like every now and then I watch some of the shows with AJ, and some of it just
mm-hmm.
appalls me. And then other,
mm-hmm.
I'm a big advocate of SpongeBob, for instance. SpongeBob
mm-hmm.
does lots of silly, goofy stuff, but at the same token, SpongeBob teaches you to take responsibility. This little
mm-hmm.
yellow, funny-looking sponge teaches the kids that if you've told Mr. Crab you're going to come to work, you're going to climb every mountain there is to get to work.
Mm-hmm.
And that if you have a friend mm-hmm. that's goofy and lumbersome and is not the sharpest pencil in the box like Patrick, you still love him because he's your friend.
Right.
It teaches
right.
you a lot about social things if you're and they do pay attention. My AJ
right.
quotes SpongeBob on a regular basis. And not the bad things, you know. Not the bad things, the good things, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
If you don't have a friend, Graham, you're lost. I say, that's right.
Yes.
That's right. And
yeah.
SpongeBob says that. So
yes.
I did want to, you know, it's funny, but, well, the other day I was making eggs for him to show you how much he thinks of SpongeBob, and I cracked an egg into the pan, and I said, Age, come here, quick, look what's in the pan. He comes over, and it was a double yolk egg, and he goes,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh,
yeah.
Graham, it looks just like SpongeBob's butt.
Oh,
and I looked at
dear.
It and I thought, oh, my God, he's right.
Oh, gosh. I know. If you could see the world through their eyes, we would act different, I think, sometimes. Yeah.
Oh, God, it would
so
lighten our own load, too, you know, if we could just understand that, you know.
Just see through their eyes.
Yeah, exactly. How young do you believe kids are when they really start to notice that we are different? Have you, you've been doing all this research, do you think there's a time when that starts to happen?
I think there's it's an early, early stage. I don't think that they can yet verbalize it. If
mm-hmm.
you watch, say, a two-year-old in a daycare setting, you will, if you just observe that child will know when it's being bullied. That child will know it's being made fun of, but they don't know how to verbalize it because their vocabulary isn't there yet. So when they start to get three or four, the vocabulary, of course, increases, and then they can say, Mommy, Johnny pulled my ear and said I have big ears and now I'm ugly because I have big ears. But only because mm-hmm. the vocabulary is able to grasp onto that concept. But they've been able to feel it and see it. And many times if you watch them on a playground, they're shunned by people. Little people who make fun of them. And they feel less than and they feel discounted. And they don't know what to do with that other than absorb it in and just know that it hurt, but they don't know why, and they don't know how to verbalize that. So it starts young, but they just don't know how to go home and tell mom yet because the words aren't there.
Yeah. Well,
and I think what's interesting is one of the stories that I heard, and I'll just share with you, is a little 5-year-old, and he got picked on the playground. His ears kept like picked on ears. Ears kept being pulled by the bigger kids, and he was ugly, and you got big ears, and your head's too small. So I said, Johnny, what did you do? And he said, well, I went home and told my mom. And I said, that's good. What did mom say? And mom said, oh, just ignore the bully. Well, in a 5-year-old's mind, that means that his feeling didn't count. I'm not even going to consider how you felt. Just ignore it. A 5-year-old doesn't know how to ignore things. They don't know what that concept is.
Yeah,
and so I said, well, what did you tell your teacher? And Johnny goes, I did tell my teacher. And she said, when it happens again, come tell me. Well, the word when tells Johnny it's going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Now tell that to a 5-year-old not to worry.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the language that we use, I think the language that we have to use as adults helping these young kids is very, very important. And that on my list of to-dos is to also write a parent-child guidebook on just helping with words. So much
to do with. I've talked about that as well, not in the depth that you're talking about, but Shelley and I have on the show a lot of nights talked about the words that you use to a child.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's some things
mm-hmm.
that I take great, great offense to. The word stupid. I hate the word stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I hate saying shut up. I
mm-hmm.
hate saying what is the matter with you. There
mm-hmm.
are certain things, and I'm not going to tell you that I never said them. I am just telling you
mm-hmm.
that when I hear someone else say them and think to myself, oh, my God, I've said that before, and that just sounds so awful. So their words, of course, are a part of our nourishment. And
right.
when we're fed the wrong words, it's just like eating bad food. And it stays
right.
with us and can make what's going on inside of a little person's body very toxic. So
that's
I'm
right.
in agreement with all of that. But now, Let me ask your advice on what if the child, what if we're talking about a child who really is different? My kids went to school with a young girl. Her dad and her mom were friends of mine. He played in a band. He was a drummer, pretty famous in Ithaca, New York. And she was born, Tricia was born with like a cleft palate. Her eyes protruded. The middle part of her face was sunken in. She didn't have any back to her nose. And but she, you know, all the kids knew her. And they all, she started kindergarten with most of them. And in the very beginning, it was a little tough. But they got, you know, they got to a place where Tricia was comfortable and all the kids were comfortable. Small town, you know. But when they realized that she was getting into, like, third grade and she was out doing things like at the skating rink or doing this or doing and other people that had never seen her before, you know, stuff started to happen. So these parents, the whole town raised enough money for Tricia to have surgery, and she died on the table. And, it's one of the saddest stories that I carry. And it's, but I remember talking to my own kids, because my own kids who were, you know, like nobody was past sixth grade when this happened, and I have four kids, and they all said to me, why did they do that? We were all right with Tricia. That's what they were saying to me, you know. And I said, I don't think this was about you guys. I think this was about Tricia, and their, her mommy and daddy were just worried that not everybody would love her the way all you guys got to love her. You know, but what if you have a child that is really noticeably got stuff, and how do you talk with that child? I mean, you know, do you have any advice for the people that are out there and maybe they're going through something like that? And, of course, you know, everybody loves their own child. I was devastated when I found out people didn't love my children. Devastated. I was like, oh, my God, you don't think they're the most beautiful children that ever walked this earth? But, you know.
So, and they still are. Know, they're 50 years old.
Exactly. Exactly. Even with all their flaws and faults and everything. What do you mean you don't love
beautiful?
Them?
Beautiful.
So, you know, I can't, you know, when the, if there is a really big problem, and of course today with some of the things we can do, there's not as many as there used to be. But I can remember, you know, like 40 years ago, children were being born all the time with things like cleft palates and all those kinds of horrible things. And now a lot of times they don't leave the hospital until they look better. But say you have that child and you want that, there's nothing else you can do, and there's, you know, you're not going to look into surgery, and you want this child to be able to live a relatively normal life. Let's think, the three of us, if there's something that could be said or something that could be taught to make that child more comfortable and help those parents deal with that kind of that kind of sadness that can happen to them. Go ahead, Shel.
Rainey and Linda, did you ever see the commercial? This commercial was on years ago. It was a commercial that was produced by Troy McClain. And he had been hired by the Special Olympics, you know, which is children who have Down syndrome and you know, those kinds of physical handicaps. And it was a black and white commercial. And I saw it recently at a lecture he was doing, because he asked for our take on it, because he actually got a lot of flack about this commercial, and I thought it was brilliant. And it was a black and white commercial, and you see this Down syndrome child talking, a young person. Obviously, you know, they speak with a lisp, and, you know, he's saying that when I'm out on the field and I'm playing, and he looks very sad as he's saying all this. He said people in the stands are pointing at me and laughing at me and making comments about me, and they're all talking about me. And then, and he goes on with this whole thing, and you think he's devastated, and then all of a sudden he gets this big smile on his face. He goes, I am so lucky. Isn't that fantastic? Or he makes some kind of a comment about the fact that he liked all the attention and completely
yeah.
turned around. And it's like, and he's laughing at the end of the commercial because he
yeah.
loves the attention. So I think
yeah.
what it is he obviously has been taught to enjoy the attention, and sort of along the same lines as what Izzy is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the people are pointing and snickering, he's choosing to take it as positive attention. So I think mm-hmm. if you can teach a child to be proud of who they are for who they are, because each person is a unique individual, whether they have a physical scar or Down
right.
syndrome or something of that nature, you know.
Right.
I used to volunteer for the Special Olympics, and some of the children were just so wonderfully outgoing and lovable that you just wanted to be around them. Not all of them were like that, because some of
mm-hmm.
them hadn't gotten past that. But the ones
mm-hmm.
that were taught to just, like, you know, you have your own particular strength, and you have the right to be proud, and they were proud, they were just wonderful to be around.
Right,
know?
Right,
and
right.
I think that has a lot to
yeah.
do with it.
Oh, it does indeed. On that note, I volunteer for an organization called Promise in Brevard, and we raise money for adults who have Down syndrome. And they are the coolest people to be around, like you were saying, Shelley. They're happy. You know, I looked at one person, I can't remember his name, but I said, you know, I envy you. You just, life is so good and so joyful and so simplistic in how you see the joy in this world. And I said, I wish I could see it that way, and I envy. But it was parental upbringing, and it is psychologists that get involved. And it is a lot of, you know, a lot of a village. It really does take a support group to get that person strong inside and to enjoy what they see in the mirror. And like you were saying, put a smile on their face and people smile. But how do you get them to that stage? That's the
mm-hmm.
key.
Well, and there's so many outside influences, and I want to say this politically correct, and I want to say this delicately. When you have some of the children that you guys are talking about are not left to go out on their own, in most cases they're supported fully by parents and friends and other people.
Yeah, but what if they're not?
Yes.
Yeah.
What if they're not?
They aren't. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And what if their challenges aren't that great, so that they're a little bit more
right.
aware of the whispers
right.
and the rolled eyes and all of those things.
Exactly.
That's what I worry about. The kids you guys are talking about, I too have worked
yeah.
with, and they're
yeah.
it's like being always with a young child, and it's very joyous.
Yeah.
It's very joyous
yeah.
because that's who they are. And especially if they're supported and loved, they're wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. But then you have something in between that
well,
is
right.
that's a little
yeah.
bit more. You know, you want to,
yeah.
they look at you and say, okay, I'm 15 and I want to go to the dance. And you know in your heart that there may be some problems. So by the time they're 15, I realize it would be hard to change anything that's already been tattooed, so to speak. But
mm-hmm.
when they're little and you know that there may
mm-hmm.
be some problems like that, you know, on a very, very, very low level, my youngest son, David, was born with a severe case of eczema. And
mm-hmm.
I sent him to the same school. He's the youngest. I sent him to the same school with Spike and Mike and Diana. And everybody knew us, small town. And yet nobody would hold his hand because his hands would get all cracked and bleeding and his nails
yeah.
would break.
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
called him Alligator Boy. And the teacher
yeah.
would look at his hands and say, oh, my God, David Brewer, go wash your hands. This is when he was five.
And
he would cry, and he'd go try to wash his hands with the school soap. So I'd go to school, and I'd say, okay, I want to talk to you and the whole class. And they'd say, okay.
Right.
I'd say, David has eczema. This is what's wrong with him.
Right.
He's, you know, it's not catching. You can't catch it.
Right.
Yes, sometimes his hands hurt him really bad, and he can only use Castile soap. Please don't have him use the school antibacterial soap anymore. All this stuff. But they still, luckily, he now is like 6'2 and weighs like 260, so nobody messes with him. But there was a time, you know, and I'd go to school, and then, of course, brothers and sister would get upset and go into a classroom and say, you know, who called my brother alligator boy and stuff like that. That's a real, you know, that's a real light thing, and he outgrew it and all that kind of stuff. But you, now, so you see what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that line there in the middle.
Yeah. The severe line, I'm not equipped to even, I would call in psychologists or people who treat that. I'm not even close to giving advice for this, for that. I would be not authentic if I even suggested I could.
Well, I would say to you that, I'm very respectful of that, because that's how I feel. I think I'm a wealth of information most of the time. Shelley can tell you that. But I do.
Yes,
I do. Yes.
Just ask Shelley.
Yeah, that's it. But I have tried to help in a situation like that. And, you know, I've said the easy things, but the truth of the matter is I worry about those kids, and I worry about them a lot, because they're in betwixt and between, and and they don't get the kind of support that the other kids get.
No, they don't.
And
in some
cases they maybe need it more. So
Well,
so we're going to put that out to our audience. If we've got anybody listening today who can relate to this story and has something positive to share with us, we are like Mickey Mouse, all ears, okay? So now I wanted to ask you, what do you know, because I was thinking about this a lot today, and since you and I had already spoken, and I love your characters, and I do want you to tell a little bit about your characters, because I think it will.
I would be glad to.
A lot of people.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. My characters are basically those that have a physical difference, appearance difference. And I did that because usually the very first thing we judge is what a person looks like, whether we're little people or older people. We usually see the outside shell much before we see what's inside, and we make a quick judgment and say things or think things that are not correct. So my characters are on the physical difference, and my main character, Shelley, is a whale. And remember I said they all live in the ocean. One of the reasons they also live in the ocean is my late husband was a fish, and I want to honor him and do everything around the water that I can do to keep him in my life.
You weren't married to the amazing Mr. Limpet, were you?
No.
He said that, and that's all that I thought of was the amazing Mr. Limpet.
Yeah, no.
Okay, all right. I just thought I'd better make sure.
Okay, thank you. No. My main character is Wetley, and Wetley is a whale, and Wetley is in all of my books, and it's called Wetley and Friend. And just friend, because each book is a different friend. Wetley is a whale, and she has her air hole, which usually is on the top of her head of whales. She has it underneath her chin. So when she feels sad, she hiccups out of the water, and therefore other whales see her, and they call her names. And so she has immediately a difference in how she looks and what happens because of the way she looks. Her very first friend is a duck. Her name is Calliope. And the duck has webbed ears instead of webbed feet. And instantly you can see the difference. Okay, so that's an instant physical difference. And Calliope gets picked on by her friends. So we have friends bullying friends. The second book is, of course, Wetley, and her friend in the second book is called Squinelope. And Squinelope is a squid who has to wear very big round eyeglasses in order to see the beautiful ocean. Now, instantly, you can see something different with Squinelope because she has to wear these glasses. And she gets bullied by her aunt Penelope, who's an octopus, and who also has to wear glasses in order to see. So the message in that that I tell children is, even moms and dads and aunts and uncles and brothers and sisters can bully you. It's not just your friends. So we're trying to educate them, raise their awareness that it's more than just a friend, and build that resiliency no matter where you're at. My third book that's at the graphic artist right now is Finley. Finley is a grouper. My husband used to love grouper sandwiches. Finley is a grouper, yeah, and he used to love squid or calamari, which is squid, therefore Squinelope,
right,
the squid.
Mm-hmm.
Finley is a grouper, a very obese grouper with buck teeth. And so Wetley is going to, and of course, she gets bullied, or it's a he. We've made Finley a he. He gets bullied by the school of other fish, right? So now it's at a school setting. And Wetley's going to help him not only become aware of how beautiful he is, but also help him to exercise through the ocean and also to learn how to eat ocean food, seaweed, things like, you know, grass, things like that, rather than food that's not healthy for him. And so that's the third book that's at the graphic artist right now. So you can see my story is being aware of where bullying can come from,
right,
and how to say, okay, what do I do with this? How do I build that resiliency? I'm 5 years old. I don't even know what the word means, right?
Right.
So
right.
That's my characters thus far.
Well,
that your characters are building resiliency, that's something that's a message that we've been talking about all along, is that it's so important to get to the point where, you know, one of the most effective ways to stop bullying is just to, like, not react to it, because that's what the bully is going for. They want you to get upset. They want you to cry or to scream or to yell back at them or to act out. And when you don't, when you're resilient and you just let it roll off your back,
somebody
else.
Well, and I think what also I want to take that concept that you just said, and I want to build into the book that you have to also stand up for those that are being bullied. It's our job, all of us, to stand up for those that aren't standing up yet. And in one of my characters, I'm going to put that message in that book as well. And I heard that from a little child in a Popco a month ago. Her name was Diana, and she wasn't being bullied, but her friend Maria was. And I asked her, tell me about what did we do to help Maria? And she said, nothing, because I don't want to be bullied, and I don't want them to beat up on me. So now what do we do? So I'm going to build a story, and my storytelling and my message is going to be, you know, we have to help each other. We have to go use our voice to help others who aren't using theirs. So I think that's important as well.
So, well, let me delve into this a little bit further, because I love that. I love stand up and help each other, stand up for each other.
Mm-hmm.
I am a big advocate of being a good friend, and I preach that all the time to my own kids and to my own family. And it isn't easy because, you know, as we are saying tonight, we are all different, and that doesn't change as we get older, and we all have different points of view. As a matter of fact, this past week, because of everything that happened last week, all the tragedy that struck in Boston and then the, the stuff in Texas, and then these two young boys, my God, you know. And I'm reading things from people that I've known for many, many years. And I got off Facebook and I came out in the living room and I said to my husband, I said, you know what? I feel like making everybody come front and center that's on Facebook and tell them to knock it off. And he said, what are you talking about? And I said, everybody's got something to say. Like, they have all the answers and, like, they know how to fix everything and they're sitting in the comfort of their living room.
Right, exactly.
And it makes me feel, first of all, angry, second of all, hurt, and third of all, like I want to speak out to them. I mean, you know, unless you have a solution, shut up.
Right. Right,
yeah,
or get out
really.
There and help. Yeah.
And when you talk about standing up for each other, that's a big part of it.
Right. Right. Do you know what the do either of you know what if I said the TED conference, TED conference, what that is?
No.
No, I've never heard
the TED
of it.
Conference,
I don't.
Okay,
do so.
It's a conference that is technology, entertainment and development. And it's a conference that a lot of educators go to throughout the year. And last month there was an author there who a poet. His name is Shane Koizan. Koizan, and he wrote this poem. Like I said, he's an author, and it's called "To This Day," and it's his story about bullying and survival. And I would encourage anyone to go out there. It is available out there on the web. They just have to go to TED conference. But let me just share with you how he started out, and he looks different than most of us. But this is how he started out, if you just have for just a second.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I hid my heart under the bed because my mother said, if you're not careful, someday someone's going to break it. Well, take it from me. Under the bed is not a good hiding spot. I know because I've been shot down so many times, I get altitude sickness just from standing up for myself. But that's what we were told. And that's hard to do if you don't know who you are or what to expect. At the same time, we're being told what we were. At the same time, we were being told what we were. We were being asked, what do you want to be when you grow up? I always thought that was an unfair question. It assumes that we already know what we're going to be, but we're just kids. When I was a kid, I wanted to be a man. I wanted to have a registered retirement savings plan that would keep me in candy long enough to make me old age. When I was a kid, I wanted to shave. Now, not so much. When I was 8, I wanted to be a marine biologist. When I was 9, I saw the movie Jaws and thought to myself, no, I don't think I'll be a marine biologist. This is one of the most important parts. When I was 10, I was told that my parents left me because of the way I looked. When I was 11, I wanted to be left alone. When I was 12, I wanted to die. When I was 13, I wanted to kill a kid. When I was 14, I was asked to seriously consider a career path. I said, I'd like to be a writer. They said, choose something realistic. So I said, I want to be a professional wrestler. And they said, don't be stupid. So they asked me what I wanted to be, then told me what not to be. And that's just the beginning of this poem. But it just strikes me as so powerful. When I was 10, I felt this. When I was 11, I felt that. When I was 12, I felt this. And
will you read that part again,
Linda,
because we lost Shelley, and I'd love her to hear 10, 11, and 12, the very deep ones. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, thank you.
When I was 10, I was told that my parents left me because I looked different. And he does. He does look different. When I was 11, I wanted to be left alone. When I was 12, I wanted to die. When I was 13, I wanted to kill a kid. When I was 14, when I was 14, I was asked to seriously consider a career path. I said, I'd like to be a writer. And they said, choose something realistic. So I said, professional wrestler. And they said, don't be stupid. See, they asked me what I wanted to be, then told me what not to be. And from what my research tells me, when I was talking to middle school children, I said, what do you do when someone's bullying you? They know what that word means now. They said, why should I do anything? Nobody listened to me when I was younger, right? And
last week, a 14-year-old girl, if you guys read that on the news, committed suicide because some of her pictures were posted on Facebook that were inappropriate. And so the only thing she could think of to stop the fire inside of her was to kill herself. So how did she feel when she was 13? How did she feel when she was 12? And it's just, this is just so powerful to me. It's just,
well, and and you see how they can turn it. You get one or the other. When they get to that, when they get to 13, they either turn against someone else or turn against themselves.
But they have to
throw up that anger on somebody. When it's themselves, they kill themselves or they hurt themselves badly. And or they walk into a school and shoot a whole bunch of people. So, you it's but the other thing that I so struggle with, and Shelley and I have discussed this on many occasions with some of our other callers and some of the people that have had a lifetime because they're a little bit different of, you know, of extreme harassment. And one of the gentlemen that calls all the time that Shelley and I quite love, he remembers, he's 47 now, and he remembers the adults that were mean to him more than he does the children. And I've said that to him, and he turned himself to loving other kids. And it's his story is a beautiful one because it's one of success. And even today, because he has a bit of a speech disorder, today even he runs into harassment and, you know, and a little bit of ridicule. But he, when it's a young person, he seems to forgive them. And I said that to him, and he goes, yeah, I guess I do. And I said, you told me stories, but you never dwell on them. It's the ones with the grown-ups that hurt you that really are bad. But I also think that there is a tremendous amount of that. When we talk the truth, a lot of the unkindness and the anger and everything comes from the people that are supposed to love us. And care about us, and that's the truth. And I hate saying it out loud because it makes it more real, but it is the truth. And of course, if you come home and say somebody's picking on me, you're not going to get much attention. So that's why I loved everything you told me, because you're talking about that. You're on the same line with Izzy. You both have different. Both have different diagrams, but you're both on the same page. Izzy is about the golden rule. Izzy Kaplan, he is the director of Bullies to Buddies, and he is so even-tempered and such a sweet, sweet man, and he believes that you treat others the way you want them to treat you, purely
golden
and
rule.
Simply.
Sure.
The golden rule. And that's been one of my favorite rules all my life. And I preach that to my kids and my grandkids and everybody else that, you know, is nice enough for to listen to me. But what you're doing right now gives us an opportunity to strengthen the kids in the very beginning and let them protect themselves.
Right.
And that's really,
they have
that's
to build
really
that strength
the safer
inside.
Way.
It's in there.
Yes.
It really is. I mean,
sure it is.
It's in there. But we just have to hold it and make it stronger and let them know they have a voice and not to ever give up their voice. And I'm just in my small little world here, I'm just trying to say, if I touch one life to get through this and grow and be healthy and help others when they're being bullied, then I've done my job well done. So, But I'm having a good time as well. My books are, I love my books. I love my story. My graphic artist is a friend who lives just down the street from me. Her name's Linda. and Linda Lindsay, and she just has the when I give her the storyline, we do storyboards. When I give her the storyboard, she'll just sit there and draw with pencil, and we'll just bring these characters to life, and they match my words on paper. And then she does them in watercolors, and we take them down to our publisher, and he just does his magic. So,
well, that's wonderful.
But it's been and you know the best part, and the best part, Rini, is when I go to schools and tell the stories. Now I'll read the book. Last when I was in Apopka, I read it in English, because right now the one I had was only in English. And Ms. Vega, the director of the program, she read it in Spanish. And it was wonderful, and it was just so wonderful. But I make sure there's always enough time in my storytelling time that I hear their stories, you know. And you don't have to ask to – you can just say, does anybody – would you like to share when someone bullied you? First of all, what does bullying mean? You have to ask them. And they are not shy to tell you. No, they are not shy. One girl started crying because she just couldn't get it out, you know. So it's just it's the storytelling that's key. And I wish I had a whole bunch of storytellers to go all over the place.
Well, hey, I'm a great storyteller. You ever need me to go someplace and read one of your books, all you got to do is let me know. I've been telling stories to my kids forever. I've been telling stories to my kids forever.
I'll send you places.
Yep, it's and there's you know, you would get a big kick out of some of the stories I've made up for my grandchildren, and they're always in it, of course, you know. And whoever is the youngest and is asked for the story is usually the hero or the heroine. One of their favorite stories is we're all out fishing, or they're all out fishing, and they dive underwater. And they don't dive underwater. They fish and they catch a mermaid. Uh-huh. And whoever is I'm telling the story to, the mermaid looks just like his beautiful mommy. And the mermaid says, "If you will let me go, I'll take you to a treasure under the water." And all the kids say, "Okay," and they all dive off the side of the boat and they all swim down. And sure enough, here's this huge treasure chest with all these jewels and everything hanging out of it. But behind it is a giant octopus, and he's protecting it. So. The octopus reaches his arms out and he grabs Crystal, and then he grabs Josh, and then he grabs Austin, and then he grabs Spikey, and AJ is the only one left, and AJ remembers he's got Grandpa's long flashlight in his back pocket, and he sticks it in the octopus's mouth, and I make a face like the octopus with his arms flailing around and his mouth stuck open because of the flashlight, and he lets go of all the kids. They grab the treasure chest, and they swim it back up to the boat, and guess where they take it? And AJ says to me, "Back to Grandma." That's right.
You know what? We should start an organization, Grandmas as Storytellers, you know, and just have people call us, and we'll go out in the world and tell stories.
Yes, I think
my
the
late
world
husband,
is missing
Scotty
a little
Ellington,
that.
Yeah, Scott Ellington, my late husband, he used to say the E stands for embellishment. And when we tell stories, we have to make it bigger than what it really is.
Absolutely.
And so I always kind of, Now my, I also have a little song that I teach the kids about Wetly. And I teach them that, and then they sing it, and we get their parents up singing. So I think with the music, it also tends to stick longer in their brain as well, so that they can sing it, and they sang it, you know, as they were walking around the class, just hanging out with each other after the storytelling. So I think that's important, too, because they like music. You know, they like music, and if it sticks in their brain, let's use some music with it. So I do have a little Wetly song that I do teach them as well.
Well, do your rendition. Are you embarrassed to sing it on the radio?
Oh, sure.
Come on, Linda.
I can say it.
Okay, cool.
Oh, okay. I like me. And I am strong. Love is good, and bullying is wrong. So that's what I teach them. I like, and then they point to me themselves. And then we get up and we just dance around. You just dance around. So that's what I teach them.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
That sounds wonderful.
So,
Good energy,
yeah,
too. And I'll tell you something. One of the things I've learned from some of the more spiritual people that I've met in the last few years is dancing and singing. And I always knew this,
yes,
in my own heart. And
yeah,
if I'm really bumming about something, I have a PT Cruiser convertible, and you can ask Shelly. I put the top down, and
yep,
I don't care how
yep
cold it is outside, and turn on
yep
my music and sing at the top
yeah
of my lungs. It's very
that's
therapeutic
right
for
that's
me.
Right.
And
right
all my kids
especially
will do it with
lost
me as well. Huh?
I said, especially when you're lost.
Yeah, well, and then I get lost a lot, too, because I'm
yeah,
very
okay
directionally challenged.
Yeah, yeah. Me too. I, you know, don't tell me to go west or east. Tell me to go left or right, you know.
Yeah.
She got lost one night going home from a friend's house, and she told me the next day, she says, oh, whatever. She said, I put the top down, put my music on, and was singing for about
yeah
45 minutes until I found my way home.
And, you know, if it works for us old folks, it sure as heck works for the little people.
It
so
absolutely
if we
does
can turn, you know, turn this story and put music to it. And I saw their eyes and their joy. And it's just, we just got to get more of our storytellers out there and just touch
that's
more lives.
That's right. And,
you know,
and more happiness and more joy
yes
and less
yeah
less vindictiveness and getting evens
yeah
and all
yeah
that kind of stuff
yeah
has got
yeah
to go away. And
yeah,
right.
I wish
it
I could drill that into the heads of more adults, but that seems to be
mm-hmm
a much
mm-hmm
harder job. So
mm-hmm
I
well,
think
I'll
that
quick tell
our way
you
is going to be
story
the best.
Is, yes, but I'll have to tell you, I also have a fourth grader who shares my story throughout her school, and I have a senior in high school in Wellington who goes, he's had cancer, and he goes and tells the story in the song to the cancer patients at Palms West Hospital.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah, and he's made a Wetley treasure chest, and the Wetley treasure chest is in the infusion room in the cancer center. And when the kids are done with their infusion for their chemo, the nurses read them the story of Wetley, and then they get to go to the treasure chest and pick out whatever they want. And his father donates all the gifts to the treasure chest, and their books and their CDs, their appropriate things. And so I do have young people, my storytellers as well. And that makes a big difference when a child tells another child a story.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, yeah.
Well,
so
I think all of this stuff is positive, and I think there's a lot of other people out there that are ready. The feedback that
tell
I
to
get.
Tell call us, Rainy.
Yes.
If they
so
can share Wetley's story somewhere, all they got to do is call me, and we'll get them there. You know, it's just we got to share the story and tell the story, but it takes all of us.
Yeah. And it takes,
yeah,
you know, it takes everybody. One of the most important things that I think so many of us have lost is empathy, because we're all so worried
yeah
about our own survival. And,
yeah,
you know, I gave a big, long speech to everybody the other night about, you know, if you spend your whole life trying to just make yourself happy, it's
yeah
an act of futility, because you
yeah
won't be happy
yeah
like that. The only way you'll ever
right
be happy is if you put a few other people in front of you. Believe me.
Right. Amen.
So
yeah,
I'm gonna
yeah
leave everybody with that, and I'm gonna thank
okay
you so much. This is a fun show, huh, Shelly? Wasn't it a good time?
Oh yes, absolutely. Very nice meeting
it
you.
It was. Linda. Thank you very much for hosting me. And Rainy, we shall meet for lunch. Let's do lunch.
Yes, we will do that. And
okay,
and please, I'm going to bring you on the show more often, because you're upbeat. You're going to bring. I'm going to hear
yes
from people tonight saying what a fun show. Because sometimes the show is about lots of tragedy. So tonight was wonderful,
yeah,
wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah.
So thank you again.
And when
again
they call you and say they're interested, let's put them to work. Let's do more than just talk about it, like you had said in the
absolutely
beginning of the show. Let's put
absolutely
their legs and feet in motion, have them work. Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. That's
well,
right.
Love it.
I'll go
I'd
along
love
with
it
that. I will go along with
perfect
that. Okay. Well, thank you both
okay
so much. Thank you, my Shelly.
Okay.
I love you. And thank you, my new friend, Linda. I love you, too.
Thank you. I love you both.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye,
from
everyone
my heart to yours, everybody.
Good night.
This is Rainy. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.